Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice.
Looks like Bus Club.
Well, I think he'd be glad to once again be the headlines stories in this week's Le Show. For the first time in 5 years, Tesla is no longer Elon Musk's most valuable asset. Finance.yahoo.com reported that after months of stock declines, Musk's stake in SpaceX has officially overtaken Tesla in his portfolio. Tesla's stock plummeted over 50% since December, causing the company to lose some $800 billion in market value. That drop also knocked roughly $100 billion off Musk's net worth. Now, the cute part of this is that after that story was reported, Musk sold X, which used to be Twitter, and which fell from $44 billion to something closer to in the teens billion. I know, it's still big money. But anyway, he sold it to another company that he owns, XAI, and, as in the process, attributed it, that is to say, X, a much higher value than the market had or than anybody else had before he sold it to himself. Yes, he's a gamer, and following up on the story we had on this program a couple of weeks ago, he's really a gamer. A video gamer of some repute, according to Politico Now, new report. That claim has generated skepticism in the gaming community over the last few years. It now resurfaced as his increasingly strident politics embroiled him in yet another conflict. The dust-up started with a leftist streamer posting an ad for a new title for Ubisoft's long-running video game Assassin's Creed Shadows. Musk, not a fan of the game, apparently. Quote, objectively, that streamer, he's referring to, is promoting a terrible game just for the money, he posted on X. There's a common suspicion that Musk either pays talented gamers to level up for him, gaining impressive in-game gear abilities and achievements that he can pass off as evidence of his own gaming prowess, or simply he buys upgrades from third-party services, a practice known in the gaming community as boosting. When Musk played a game called Path of Exile 2 on live stream, his account looked like that of an accomplished top competitor, but gamers dissected his gameplay performance in a flurry of YouTube videos and Reddit threats as amateurish, or, to use the gaming vernacular, noobish. Others pointed out that his high-level account was active even while Musk was busy attending President Trump's inauguration. The accusations came to a head a couple months ago. Musk appeared to admit his boosting to a gaming YouTuber and Diablo 4 megafan Nicholas Hayes in a video Musk later shared on his own X feed. Hayes detailed what he said was a direct message conversation with Musk in which he asked the executive whether he had boosted in Path of Exile 2 or Diablo 4. According to the video, Musk responded with 100% emoji, adding that, quote, it's impossible to beat the players in Asia if you don't, as they do. Musk's focus on video games dovetails, according to Politico, with a storied practice in American politics, boasting about your athletic prowess. But Musk isn't a jock. He's a nerd. He sought to flex his strategic and mathematical mind, but a growing subset of his would-be gamer audience isn't buying it. That's Musk love for you. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a week when at least some of us didn't know what was classified and what wasn't. It's going to take oily-haired Secretary of Defense to figure it out. Hello, welcome to the show.
how you classify. That ain't no lie. Some say I'm crazy, some say that I'm dumb. It doesn't mean that you know where I'm coming from. Don't call me crazy, don't you dare try to call me all out of my name. If you had my feelings, I'm quite sure you'd feel the same.
From Santa Monica, California, the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer welcoming you. Yes, actually welcoming you to this edition of the show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of our friend the Atom.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Safe, cheap, too cheap to meet. Cheap, safe, too safe to meet. Safe, safe, too safe to meet.
Well, you'll never guess who wants radioactive plutonium at a British nuclear plant to be recycled instead of stored. Recycled into new nuclear fuel. Could also be recycled into a bomb, but we're not. In January, the British government said it would put 140 tons of plutonium currently stored at a nuclear plant called Sellafield in Cumbria. You know where that is. Beyond reach is where they were going to put it, making it ready for permanent disposal deep underground. Before it goes underground, it's beyond reach. That sounds safe, doesn't it? But the GMB union said plutonium should be considered a national asset, not a liability. The Department for Energy Security said immobilizing the stockpile was the best long-term solution for cleaning up our nuclear legacy. That's what garbage is. It's a legacy. Plutonium has been kept at Sellafield for decades when spent nuclear fuel is separated into its component parts. One of the products is plutonium. Successive governments have kept the material to leave open the option to recycle it. But storing the highly radioactive material in its current form is expensive and difficult and frequently needs to be repackaged because radiation damages storage containers. In January, the British government said the safest, most economically viable solution was to immobilize its entire plutonium stockpile. You're going to cripple it? But the official of the union, Dan Gao, said any decision about the nuclear plant should involve genuine consultation with the workers. He said Sellafield workers, quote, keep this country safe and deserve better than broken promises and short-sighted policies, unquote. The government department said new nuclear power would play an important role in helping the UK achieve energy security and net zero while securing thousands of good skilled jobs. But, quote, constructing the UK's first geological disposal facility will provide an internationally recognized safe and permanent disposal of the most hazardous radioactive waste, unquote, a very optimistic spokesperson. Three areas are currently being considered by the government to host the nuclear waste disposal site. Two of them in Cumbria. You know where that is. It's not near Cambria, tell you that. News of our friend the Atom. And now.
It's a smart world after all. It's a smart world after all. It's a smart world after all. It's a smart, smart world.
The genetic testing company 23andMe has filed for bankruptcy. That's prompting people who use the service and sent in their DNA samples. That's smart. To be analyzed. Their DNA samples to be analyzed, I say. To wonder what will happen to their genetic data. The company says the filing for bankruptcy does not change how it stores, manages, or protects customer data, according to the Associated Press. But some privacy experts are recommending the people who have used 23andMe delete their data, given concerns not only about a potential buyer getting access to sensitive information, but also hackers who might take advantage of the upheaval to gain access to that sensitive information. Quote, "What we're witnessing with 23andMe is a stark wake-up call for data privacy," unquote, Adrianus Vormenhoven, a cybersecurity expert at NordVPN. Quote, genetic data isn't just a bit of personal information. It's a blueprint of your entire biological profile. When a company goes under, this personal data is an asset to be sold with potentially far-reaching consequences, unquote him. 23andMe filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection a week ago. And Wojcicki, who co-founded the company nearly two decades ago and has served as its CEO, stepped down effectively immediately. She's in a rush. The San Francisco-based company said it will look to sell, quote, substantially all of its assets, unquote, through a court-approved plan. Assets include your DNA information? Might be. Ask 23andMe. And now, news of the godly. Six senior cardinals, including the two considered strong contenders to be future popes, have been accused by campaigners of covering up sexual abuse in the Roman Catholic Church. No! A bombshell dossier of complaints compiled by groups representing survivors of clerical sex abuse has been handed to Cardinal Pietro Parolin, the Vatican Secretary of State, number two to the Pope. He'll be the Pope when the Pope isn't the Pope. The allegations were made public on Thursday and reported by the British newspaper The Telegraph. The survivors' network of those abused by priests, SNAP, along with their survivors' organization called Nate's Mission, alleged the six cardinals either enabled or concealed sexual abuse committed by Catholic clergy, called for the Holy See to see, and launch an immediate investigation. The Vatican didn't respond to a request for comment, nor has it publicly addressed the allegations or fed the alligators. And speaking of British religiosity, the former Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, yes, it's a Justin Welby spring, has told the BBC he failed to follow up abuse allegations within the Church of England because the scale of the problem was, quote, absolutely overwhelming, unquote. In November, he became the first archbishop in more than 1,000 years to quit as a result of a scandal in the church, after a damning independent review found he didn't follow up rigorously enough on reports about John Smythe, a serial abuser of children and young men. In his first interview since resigning, Welby told the BBC that the sheer scale of the problem was a reason, not an excuse, for his failure to act after taking the job way back in 2013. Quote, every day, more cases were coming across the desk that had been in the past, hadn't been dealt with adequately, and this was just, it was another case. And yes, I knew Smythe, but it was an absolutely overwhelming few weeks, he said. I'd blame the desk. Quote, it was overwhelming, one was trying to prioritize, but I think it's easy to sound defensive over this. The reality is, I got it wrong. As Archbishop, there are no excuses, unquote. Hey, maybe you want to be Secretary of Defense instead. One of Smythe's victims, known as Graham, who reported the abuse allegation in 2013, told the BBC, quote, the Archbishop suggests he was just too busy. No one should be too busy to deal with a safeguarding disclosure. The Archbishop has never answered why there were not enormous red flags when told about horrific abuse, unquote. Well, they cost money, don't they? Enormous red flags? Maybe miniature red flags. The Macon Review, an independent report, led to safeguarding expert Keith Macon finding Smythe's horrific and violent abuse on more than 100 children and young men in England and Africa was covered up within the Church of England for decades. Smythe was a lawyer and senior member of a Christian charity. He was accused of attacking dozens of boys at his home in Winchester, Hampshire, and at Christian camps in the 1970s and 80s, when camping was good. He's said to have subjected his victims to traumatic physical, sexual, psychological, and spiritual attacks, including giving 8 boys a total of 14,000 lashings with a garden cane in his shed. Well, he had a shed. Isn't that enough? He then moved on to Africa, where his abuse continued. By 2013, the Church of England knew at the highest level about Smythe's abuse, according to Welby, who took up the church's top job that year, according to the Macon Review. It added Welby, quote, couldn't, should, unquote, have reported the case to authorities when details were presented to him in 2013, and that Smythe could have been brought to justice earlier or ever. In fact, he died age 77 in Cape Town 7 years ago, before he could be brought to justice. Well, he was brought to a coffin. That's close. The review concluded that Welby, as the leader of the Episcopal Church, had not been sufficiently curious about the allegations when he was made aware of them in 2013, and that it was unlikely he had not known about them before. He's always denied being aware of Smythe's behavior before that particular year. He had previously resisted calls to step aside over his response to the case, and when the Macon Review was released last November, he insisted he didn't have to resign, but days later, he said in a statement that he, quote, must take personal and institutional responsibility for his response to the scandal. He said at the time that he stepped down in sorrow with all victims and survivors of abuse. That sorrow is useful, isn't it? News of the godly. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the side effects of the week.
Don't share needles or pens or reuse needles. Don't take Ozempic if you or your family ever had medullary thyroid cancer or have multiple endocrine neoplasia syndrome type 2 or if allergic to it. Stop Ozempic and get medical help right away if you get a lump or swelling in your neck, severe stomach pain, or an allergic reaction. Serious side effects may include pancreatitis. Gallbladder problems may occur. Tell your provider about vision problems or changes. Taking Ozempic with a sulfonylurea or insulin may increase low blood sugar risk. Side effects like nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea may lead to dehydration, which may worsen kidney problems.
On the other hand, it may not. Ladies and gentlemen, this week, you know that the felon president, imposed new high tariffs on automobiles, which would be bad enough, but he also imposed them on
auto parts,
because almost every car, even made in America, has parts from overseas. So the car prices are going up in this country, maybe, you think? Still, tariffs yet to be imposed on April 2nd, or not, or yes.
They didn't report.
when I had to be in court, that I used to slip some bail to the bailiff. But when it comes to the economy, I'm my own nominee. And I put the if in tariff. It's my favorite word, best I've ever heard. More humane than the plain in plaintiff. There's no debate, I'm a potentate, and I always put the if in tariff. The Bible is my all-time favorite book, and the Pope is my favorite pontiff. But I found out that I like the benefit of doubt, so I put the if in tariff. When the president does it, then that's the law. You can ask any attorney or sheriff, but when it comes to a tax, I don't mind being lax, so I keep putting the if in tariff. It's widely known, I won't give a dog a bone, not a schnauzer, not a mastiff. But Canada and Mexico are really like part of America, so I just keep putting the if in tariff. Rain or shine, the decision is mine, so there's always an if in tariff, in tariff.
You'll never know how much I really love you. You'll never know how much I really care. Listen, do you want to know a secret? Do you promise not to tell? Whoa, whoa, closer. Let me whisper in your ear. Say the words you long to hear. Listen, do you want to know a secret? Do you promise not to tell? Whoa, whoa, closer. Let me whisper in your ear. Say the words you long to hear. I'm in love with you. I've known a secret for.
Mar-a-Lago, where the elite meet to meet me. This is the universe's favorite president with another edition of Truth Social Audio. brought to you by Trump Ham. Nothing used to go better with eggs. Last week, I talked to you about judges. This week, let's talk, and you listen, as I talk about lawyers. After all, a judge is only a lawyer in a bathrobe. During all the witch hunts, I needed lawyers, and I got the meanest, most bloodthirsty ones I could find. None of them actually drank blood, at least while they were on the clock. But now that the witch hunts are over, at least until the crazed radical Democrats wake up from their long, stupid sleep, it's time to put the lawyers back in their place. The trash bin. Oh, there are some good ones still, and they're in my administration, helping to make liberal lives miserable, as is only possible when, like a lawyer, you use five words instead of one, and four of them you made up. But Washington, D.C. is a hotbed of lawyers, crazier than anyone has ever seen. They were behind the witch hunt. They were behind the Russia hoax. From all I know, they may have been behind the sinking of the Titanic. These are demented show-offs who act like laws are weapons, when in fact they're more like little rules, very little, and rules you obey when you can. But if you can't always do that, it's not like some criminal case. Criminals, in case any lawyers are listening, are demented monsters who should be deported. And the only reason they're not is because they have lawyers. You can always tell a lawyer when you see one walking down the street, carrying a briefcase as big as a bathtub filled with more papers than a Brooklyn newsstand. And they always act like the fact that they went to law school is some big deal. Take it from me. Going to business school is a lot harder, unless you happen to know somebody. So part of Trump's agenda this time around is to put the big law guys in their place, a place where there's no room for lawsuits against yours truly. Some of us are too busy for that crap. Until next time, that's it for this time.
Trump Social Audio is also brought to you by Trump Tires. They know how to stay inflated. So long.
From Santa Monica, this is Le Show, and now, ladies and gentlemen, Ralph introduces our next feature. Ralph?
AI to the rescue, smarter every day. From work to play, it leads the way. Innovation, creation, it's here to stay. AI makes life better. Hip, hip, hooray.
Hip, 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 hooray. Last year, AI-powered sales automation startup 11x appeared to be on an explosive growth trajectory, according to TechCrunch. However, nearly two dozen sources, including investors and current and former employees, told TechCrunch that the company, 11x, has experienced financial struggles, largely of its own making. What is it they do? I'll tell you in a minute. Numerous people in the U.S. and U.K. told TechCrunch that the situation becomes so tenuous that 11X's lead Series B investor, Andreessen Horowitz, may even be considering legal action. I invested in you and I'm going to sue you. However, a spokesperson for Andreessen Horowitz emphatically denied such rumblings, telling TechCrunch that it's not suing. 11X offers an AI bot for outbound cold sales duties, including identifying prospects, crafting custom messages, and scheduling sales calls. It's one of a number of AI startups in the hot area. I said the hot area, known as AI Sales Development Representatives, or AI SDRs. To you and me. Founded in 2022, 11X said it approached $10 million in annualized recurring revenue. Just 2 years after its launch, it moved from London to Silicon Valley last July and announced a $24 million Series A last September. TechCrunch broke the news of a $50 million Series B, led by Andreessen Horowitz. Three current and former 11X workers said that most of its early customers took advantage of break clauses in their sales contracts to discontinue using the product. Customers faced issues such as the emailing product not working as expected, or hallucinations, according to sources. There are those nasty hallucinations again. Meanwhile, generative AI assistants packaged up as browser extensions harvest personal data with minimal safeguards. The warning comes from researchers published in the Register, the British Tech Journal. Some of these extensions may violate their own privacy commitments and potentially run afoul of U.S. regulations, such as HIPAA and, my favorite, FERPA, by collecting and funneling away health and student data. A group of computer scientists from University of California, Davis, Mediterranean University of Reggio Calabria in Italy, University College London, and Universidad Carlos III de Madrid in Spain, yes, set out to analyze the privacy practices of browser extensions that use AI to do things like produce summaries of web pages or answer questions about content. The academics describe their findings in the preprint paper, Big Help or Big Brother, Auditing, Tracking, and Profiling and Personalization in Generative AI Assistants. I said generative. Despite the use of familiar terms like ChatGPT, Google, and Copilot in the titles of these extensions, the makers of these extensions are unaffiliated with Google, Microsoft, or OpenAI. That should be enough right there. But there's more. What the academics found is not entirely surprising, given the long history of privacy and security problems in the Chrome extension ecosystem. Do you know about this? For one thing, this add-on software typically has the power to inspect and modify the pages you visit. In the case of these assistants, they send off your data, such as the web page you're on, to remote AI services for processing and, my favorite, harvesting. If that page has anything sensitive on it, off it goes into the internet. When you think about it, the risk seems obvious, but these academics have taken the time to document it so that one no longer has to make assumptions. Quote, in our study, we emphasize that not only do these assistants collect users' highly sensitive data, says one of the authors of the report, but that this information is also shared with their own servers, as well as third-party trackers, which can be further utilized to target highly personalized and sensitive ads to the users. Quote, our paper tries to emphasize that in the age of AI, the already poor privacy of Chrome extensions can be further exploited by AI assistants, which can use this information to profile users over time, and then personalize their responses for the user, which could be highly sensitive. The data collected about the user could be used by these assistants to further train their models and may have inadvertent consequences. Those are, of course, my favorite kind of consequences. News of AI, ladies and gentlemen. And, something's cold in here. Must be a crypto winter. Binance, that's a crypto firm, announced on Twitter, that's a Elon Musk firm, that they had fired an employee after discovering that the employee had engaged in insider trading. The employee took a large position in a token that he knew would be engaging in a token generation event. Sounds dirty. And then quickly sold off the token after the project announced the event. According to Binance, this allowed him to, quote, realize significant profits, unquote. Binance announced they had fired the employee as this behavior constitutes front-running based on non-public information obtained from his previous role and is a clear breach of company policy. The company became aware of the insider trading after they were alerted by outside parties. You got to have the outside to get the inside. And the Office of the Attorney General of the State of New York has fined Galaxy Digital Holdings Limited $200 million following an investigation into its alleged market manipulation of the crypto so-called currency Luna. This is from Crypto News. The investigation conducted under the Martin Act one of my favorite acts, found that Galaxy engaged in deceptive trading practices by promoting Luna while secretly offloading its holdings. Like, this ain't worth nothing. Here, you take it. Galaxy Digital, led by CEO Michael Novogratz, allegedly began acquiring Luna 5 years ago directly from Terraform Labs at a significant discount, with the understanding that it would use its influence to drive interest in the token. Public endorsements by Novogratz and other Galaxy representatives led to a surge in Luna's price, reaching a peak of $119.18 in April 3 years ago. However, during this period, Galaxy was systematically selling its holdings, making substantial profits while failing to disclose these actions. The collapse of Luna the next month, May 2022, wiped out over $40 billion in market value, leaving retail investors devastated. According to Crypto News, that's their word, the OAG's investigation concluded that Galaxy's actions constituted fraud, deception, and market manipulation, violating state securities laws. But I thought it was a current... The OAG's findings detail a carefully orchestrated scheme in which Galaxy Digital exploited its influence to inflate Luna's value while ensuring its own financial gains. Isn't that what they're supposed to do? Ooh, it's crypto winter. And now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
And the strong. Residents of two tower blocks in North London have described their shock after discovering replacement window panes had been installed inside out. People living on the Chalcotts estate in Swiss Cottage have endured years of building work to remove dangerous cladding, the same as that used on the Grenfell Tower, which about 80 people, more than 80 people, died several years ago, said one of the residents. Imagine waiting for all these years and you think finally you'll come back to your room, your building, your flat, and inside out. It's terrible. I can't even imagine it. The Camden Council, Camden is one of the boroughs of London, apologized, adding, "This is not a safety concern, but will affect the reduction of overheating in the summer, so we will be putting this right straight away." Council spokesperson added, "This corrective work does not extend the overall program, as it can be done simultaneously to the remaining work, which needs to be done, and will be at no extra cost to the council or the taxpayer." The external cladding was removed from the five tower blocks following fire safety inspections in the wake of that Grenfell Tower disaster in 2017. Tests had shown the cladding used was identical to that at Grenfell. The local authority has since spent millions of pounds to rectify the cladding. Take it from me, you want your cladding rectified. Deadline St. Louis. St. Louis University was set to apologize for enslaving people. Hours before the ceremony, a group of descendants of black people the school had enslaved backed out, citing concerns that the years-long reconciliation process ultimately felt too symbolic. Quote, "We had no choice but to not participate in this today," said Robin Prouty, executive director and founder of Descendants of the St. Louis University Enslaved, at a briefing this week. Prouty's voice broke while delivering her remarks to reporters. Quote, "For 5 years, we've done everything they have asked us to do, but what we will not do is become a photo op so they can parade us around and act like we're in alignment with what they're doing," unquote. Prouty is descended from Henrietta Mills, who was enslaved by the Jesuits in St. Louis some 165 years ago, when enslaving was good. She was hopeful after years of collaborating with the university on what repair and reconciliation would look like. She told PBS News that the descendants pulled out after hearing that the board approved an approach to move forward that completely took reparations off of the table. The school, Prouty said, plan to commit to an apology, a monument, and a report. By the way, there were reparations paid to the slave owners for their loss of property. Dateline Coachella Valley, the unified school district there, has apologized to the U.S. Border Patrol after one of its recruiters was barred from attending a high school career fair earlier this week. The Border Patrol officer was denied from participating in the Coachella Valley High School career fair in Riverside County, which sparked immediate backlash from one of the agency's leaders in Southern California. Agendas in schools? Question mark. After being invited to a career fair at Coachella Valley High, the principal told our recruiter to leave. No explanation given. That's what Chief Patrol Agent Gregory Bovino, based in El Centro, said on the social media platform X. Students depend on leadership promoting an environment of learning and creativity, not agenda-driven edicts, he said. A day later, the school district said in a statement, the denial was inadvertent, and those involved would face discipline. Quote, we wanted to make it very clear that we do not condone this behavior. An appropriate disciplinary action will be taken with the involved staff members to ensure this does not happen again. Our students have greatly appreciated the valuable interactions and insights they've gained from learning about careers in law enforcement and the Border Patrol. Unquote. Coachella Valley's student body is predominantly Latino, with many migrant students. And the incident occurred as the Trump administration promised to carry out mass deportations. Many cheered on Bovino's post, questioning the district's motives. He posted an update Thursday after the district apologized. Quote, we accept and thank the Coachella Valley Unified School District for the apology. We look forward to continuing our relationship with them for the benefit of our youth and students, he said. Others, however, cheered on the staff who denied the officer's entry. Quote, we like a principal who helps their students. Grow a backbone and advocate for the community you serve, one person wrote on Facebook. The district's statement concluded it would welcome the Border Patrol at future fairs. Former Arkansas coach Nolan Richardson is alive and well at 83, but Stephen A. Smith, the highly paid sports commentator, referred to Richardson as the late great Nolan Richardson during one of his appearances on the ESPN show First Take, before saying, quote, God rest his soul, unquote. Smith then corrected himself and apologized for the error. Quote, oh, by the way, before we even begin the show, I just want to make sure I say I'm fully aware that Nolan Richardson is alive. Trust me, I apologize for that. I don't know why I said God rest his soul. I know he's alive. I've always known that. I just wanted to make sure I made that clear. Molly, Karen, his co-anchor, before we move on with the show, I don't want anybody thinking I thought the man was gone. I did not. I know he's alive. Unquote. Speaking of sports, a staffer for the University of Connecticut men's basketball team has reportedly apologized to a college basketball reporter after threatening to, quote, ruin his life over a video he took of the team's head coach that went viral. The video did, not the coach. Joey Ellis, a sports reporter for the Queen City News, shared on social media that he spoke with UConn men's basketball director of communications Bobby Mullen and that Mullen apologized for his behavior. Ellis said he accepted Mullen's apology and that life rolls on. The behavior drew backlash in recent days after he, Mullen, threatened to ruin Ellis's life over a video the reporter took showing the UConn men's basketball coach Dan Hurley swearing and complaining about the referees who officiated the team's season-ending loss to the University of Florida last week. By the way, Hurley was portrayed favorably on a recent edition of 60 Minutes. UConn, his team, back-to-back NCAA men's basketball champions, lost by 2 points in one of the closest games of this year's March Madness. After the game, Ellis shared the video of Hurley, 52, yelling and complaining to the coaching staff for Baylor University's men's basketball team, who was waiting to take the court for the next game. Quote, "I hope they don't F you like they F'd us," Hurley is heard yelling in the clip. No apology from Hurley. Well, he's been portrayed on 60 Minutes favorably. He didn't need to apologize, did he? Said Stuart Mandel, the sports reporter for The Athletic. What a clown. Embarrassing look for them, said an Athletic reporter, Colton Pouncey. Others questioned Mullen's initial statement about the controversy where he claimed that Ellis was, quote, in an area he should not have been, unquote, and bemoaned that the, quote, lasting image of Coach Hurley leaving the court should have been his walking off the court arm in arm with his seniors, overwhelmed with emotion. We didn't see that in the 60 Minutes report. Popular Japanese beef bowl chain Sukiya is under fire for hygiene concerns after it admitted that one of its stores served a bowl of miso soup with a full rodent in it. The incident is raising concerns over the company's hygiene and management practices after it failed to disclose the incident back when it happened 2 months ago. The controversy began this week on Japanese social media. Some users noticed a Google review for the Sukiya beef bowl store in Minima Yoshikata from back in January. The review appears to have been deleted. However, images on social media contain text from the reviewer saying that they ordered the chain's famous tamakaki breakfast in late January. They got more protein than they bargained for, though. The miso soup contained what appeared to be a full mouse carcass. In the one-star review, the user claims they reported the incident to local health authorities. At first, many expressed disbelief that the image was real. They assumed, or hoped, maybe, that the disgusting depiction was AI-generated. But this week, the chain confirmed the incident in a posting on its website. Sukiya claims the mouse wasn't in the soup itself, but that the creature had curled up into one of the bowls and passed away. They claim the employee who served the soup poured it into the bowl without noticing the mouse carcass. Well, that's what you get for hiring blind employees. Sukiya says it temporarily closed the store and inspected the building for any cracks or other openings that might need sealing. It says it opened the store 2 days later, after receiving a seal of approval from a health inspector. And the chain says it's instructing all staff at all stores to examine all bowls before serving to make sure they're free of contaminants. In a statement, the chain wrote, quote, "Many customers are feeling stressed and concerned from hearing incomplete information about this incident secondhand, which is a result of us withholding information from our homepage and other outlets at the time of the incident. Once again, we apologize to our customers and those involved for the trouble and concern we've caused you." They did not, however, apologize to the mouse. Deadline Northville, New York. A coach who was fired within hours of pulling a player's ponytail after a loss in a New York girls' basketball state championship game issued an apology this week, saying his actions were unacceptable. Jim Zullo, formerly the coach of the girls' team at Northville Central in New York, was dismissed by the school in the Adirondacks after video footage showed him pulling the hair of player Haley Monroe, as they say in Louisiana, or Monroe, moments after their team lost the state final. "I deeply regret my behavior following the loss to Lafargeville Friday night in the Class D state championship game," Zullo said in his statement, which was first obtained by Albany television station. "I want to offer my sincerest apologies to Haley and her family, our team, the good folks at Northville Central Schools, and our community. As a coach, under no circumstances is it acceptable to put my hands on a player, and I'm truly sorry. I wish I could have those moments back." The incident happened as the teams were lining up for the post-game ceremony. Zullo, 81, coached at Northville for the past 2 years, took the team to the state final each of those years. He was a highly successful boys coach in the state for decades. He took the Northville job in part at his wife wife's urging while she was dying of cancer. His wife died during the 2023-24 season. No, he didn't pull her book. In Dateline Sao Paulo, Brazil's government this week apologized to families of victims of the country's military dictatorship, whose remains could be found among those found in a clandestine mass grave 35 years ago. Dozens of families are still waiting to know whether their parents, children, siblings, and friends are in one of more than 1,000 blue bags discovered in 1990 in a ditch in a São Paulo cemetery in the isolated district of Pierros. That was the first of many mass graves uncovered by Brazil's authorities after the end of the 21-year military rule in 1985. That's what we've got in store. The clandestine grave at the Dom Bosco Cemetery also contained remains of several unidentified people who were not linked to the fight against Brazil's dictatorship. The official apology is part of a deal between prosecutors, family members, and the state. It took place during Right to Truth Day, which is also celebrated in other countries, not ours. Human Rights Minister Marcos Evaristo said the Brazilian state was neglectful in the identification process of the bags and bones found in Pirros. For almost 25 years, the remains were held by three state universities and labs outside Brazil. Only a handful of families finally had their loved ones identified. And final apology, a new 63,000-seater stadium will be built in Brisbane, Australia, as the centerpiece of the 2032 Olympic and Paralympic Games. That's an announcement from the Queensland government. The multi-sport arena, to be built in the Victoria Park area of Brisbane, will host the opening and closing ceremonies as well as athletics. The plans will see the That's track and field to us. The plans will see the new stadium become Brisbane's home for cricket. The famous Gabba Stadium would be demolished following the games. The decision was announced by Queensland Premier David Crisafulli. It comes following numerous pledges before the state elections that a new stadium would not be built. Quote, "I have to own that, and I will. I'm sorry. It's my decision, and I accept that decision," unquote. Crisafulli. The government had toyed with plans to redevelop the Gabba, which was built in 1895 and has staged 67 men's test matches. But those plans were scrapped following a review into planning for 2032 and the Olympic Games. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this week's edition of the show. Back next week, the same time, over the same radio stations, and on your audio device whenever you want it. The email address for this program. Are there any Cars I Talk t-shirts in the closet? I don't think so. And the playlist of music heard here on, and lots of stuff to read and listen to and watch and enjoy and regret, all at harryshearer.com. And I'm on Blue Sky at Harry Shearer. And that's the end of that. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Change is Easy radio network. So long from the home of the homeless.